Ray Kurzweil is one of the world's leading inventors and futurists. He's been described as the ultimate thinking machine, and he believes we're all on our way to becoming thinking machines, literally. Kurzweil says we'll soon have tiny computers embedded in our brains. He thinks we're on the verge of a new era in evolution, a fusion of biology and machine technology. Kurzweil spells out this visionary future in his books The Singularity Is Near and How to Create a Mind. He tells Steve Paulson what we can look forward to.
We'll have nanobots, blood cell-sized devices that have powerful computers in them and communication devices. It'll all be on a wireless local area network. They'll be on the internet, and we can have billions of them in our brain. Today we have neural implants. In fact, some of them are programmable from outside the patient, like the FDA-approved Parkinson's implant. But these have to be surgically implanted. We'll be able to send them in without surgery, and not just to one spot in the brain, but to billions of locations, and have them interact with our biological neurons and really evolve into a hybrid of biological and non-biological intelligence by the late 2020s.
So what does that mean if we are, in a sense, hooked up to the internet just constantly all the time because we have this technology implanted in our brain? What changes at that point?
Well, some people feel we're already there, but we do have to interact with our computers, which for the most part are outside our bodies today, but they're going to make their way inside our clothing and ultimately inside our bodies. Once we can build computers that are the size of blood cells in the early 2020s, they'll be interacting with our bodies and brains to vastly expand human intelligence. Now, one thing that's important to understand is that once the non-biological intelligence gets a foothold in our brains, that non-biological portion of our intelligence will double in power every year, not because it's self-replicating, but just because that's the nature of what I call the law of accelerating returns, and that's been going on for a century and will continue. Our biological intelligence is basically fixed. By my calculations, we have 10 to the 26th power calculations per second among all the human brains in the world, and that'll be the same 50 years from now. But by the 2020s, we'll achieve the crossover point. And in 2030s, the non-biological portion of our intelligence will be much more powerful than the biological portion. And by the 2040s, I put the date for the singularity at 2045, because at that time, the non-biological portion of our intelligence, the intelligence of our civilization, will be a billion times more capable than the biological portion.
Now, when you talk about all of this intelligence, I mean, becoming millions or even billions of times more intelligent than what the biological brain is today, are you basically talking about the computational power of the brain, or are you talking about all kinds of things? I mean, other kinds of neural capacities?
Okay, good question. If we talk about human intelligence, we can identify both hardware, computational ability, and software, which is to say the methods, the principles by which we can recognize patterns or display emotional intelligence or solve analytical problems and so on. In order to achieve human levels of intelligence, so-called strong AI, strong artificial intelligence, we need both the hardware and the software.
So you're talking about computer artificial intelligence that shows love and happiness and all of those very human emotions.
That's right. All that takes place in our brain. Our emotional intelligence is not something sort of stuck on the side as a sideshow. It's actually the cutting edge of human intelligence. Being funny, being jealous, expressing a loving sentiment, these are very complex, sophisticated behaviors. It's actually the most intelligent thing that we do. But we will ultimately understand that.
Well, suppose this future comes to pass, what you've just laid out, and we're in the year 2050, and there are all of these super smart people. How does life change at that point, and what's different?
We will go through a stage in the 2020s and 2030s where we are putting these intelligent nanobots in our bloodstream, which will keep us healthy from inside, augment our immune system, provide dramatic gains in human life expectancy, and then expand our mental functions. We'll still be human-like, but we'll have these mental prostheses. Now, some people might say that search engines are already a memory enhancement. I certainly use them. In fact, I may be on interviews, and I'm sitting there on my search engine and looking up facts in real time. And one woman said that her son's computer may as well be in his brain because he carries it around with him all the time. But over time, and because of this exponential growth, that non-biological portion of our intelligence will ultimately predominate. And we'll have human-level intelligence that doesn't have a physical body in real reality, but we'll be able to project bodies in virtual reality. We'll be spending more and more time in virtual reality. For example, if you want to go in virtual reality, the nanobots shut down the signals coming from your real senses, replace them with the signals that your brain would have been receiving had it been in the virtual environment. And to your brain, it feels like you're in that virtual environment. It can be just as realistic and compelling as real reality. You go to move your arm and your legs, but it moves your virtual body. So for your real body, your virtual body doesn't have to be the same body you have in real reality. Design of new virtual reality environments and new bodies to inhabit those environments will be a new art form. You can go there with one other special person or 100 people from anything from a conference to an intimate encounter and have these virtual experiences involving all of your senses.
Does the physical body become irrelevant? Does it become an anachronism?
Well, you know, we don't abandon old technologies immediately. People didn't throw their manual typewriters away when the first, you know, clumsy word processors appeared, but it's hard to find a mechanical typewriter today. We tend to keep these old technologies around.
So the body, the human body, you're saying, will become an old technology going the way of the typewriter.
Eventually, we'll be able to create human body version 2.0 and 3.0, and you can have different bodies. You know, a couple could become each other to experience a relationship from the other's perspective, or a teacher could assign a student not just to dress up as Ben Franklin, but to be Ben Franklin in a virtual congressional congress. So there's applications for relationships, for education, certainly for entertainment.
Now, of course, a lot of people are appalled by this scenario. And part of what bothers them so much is it seems like you're redefining what it means to be human. And I'm wondering if you see it that way.
My definition of being human is we are the species that goes beyond our limitations. We didn't stay in the ground. We didn't even stay on the planet. We have not stayed with the limitations of our biology. When our genes were evolving, it was in the interest of the species for not that many people to live past child rearing, which generally meant like age 28, because there were only limited resources, and those are best used by the young and those caring for them. In 1800, human life expectancy was 37. Mozart and Schubert died in the 30s, and that was typical. There was no sanitation, so people got bacterial infections. There were no antibiotics. There were no social safety nets. Human life was very hard. So we've gone, you know, way beyond those limitations already. No other species has a knowledge base that they pass down from generation to generation. They may teach certain genetically prescribed skills to their young, but they don't have a knowledge base that itself evolves. Our knowledge base is doubling every year, and we need our technology to encompass it.
Ray Kurzweil, talking with Steve Paulson. His books include The Singularity Is Near and How to Create a Mind. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, Extraordinary Minds, is part of our special series, Meet Your Mind, a user's guide to the science of consciousness, brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio. Our series was produced by Steve Paulson, with the help of Ann Strainchamp, Sarah Nix, Doug Gordon, Veronica Rickert, Charles Monroe Kane, and Naya Mukherjee. Our technical director is Kirill Owen. Steve Mullen at Walk West Productions wrote the theme music. Special thanks to two of our sponsors for Meet Your Mind. Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and the Neuer Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.
PRI, Public Radio International.